Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
The world outside your window may not be great, but in here, everything is Falcon Super, as we're talking all things the Falcon and the Winter Soldier here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom stepping in, hoping I was able to sell that opening line, at least more so than Wyatt Russell is selling that Captain America helmet. All very excited to talk about SpongeCap Squareheads and everything else going on with the opening episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I am, of course, joined by two intrepid people to walk us through this six-episode series as the MCU continues its Disney Plus coverage. First, someone who I know could probably spank me in a battle, a barside battleship, Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how's it going?
I am very good at battleship. I can read you like a book. Just for I know, just from looking at you, exactly where you place your battleships, and you are one of those people who place your battleships perpendicular.
So yeah. Listen, you caught me out. LaTanya, once upon a time on another type of podcast, you said that you have read another PSR co-host Chappelle like a book. Does that play into battleship as well? Do you think you could take Chappelle down very easily just looking at what he might be placing?
Chappelle is tricksy and false, so I'm not sure. Also, like, very competitive about random things, so I'm sure if we tried to play Battleship together, it would just become a war. You know?
Just turn from Battleship into war.
Family. It would cause a civil war.
Exactly. Well, listen, someone who is also competitive about random things, Captain America, and therefore the legacy that he leaves behind, as we're talking about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier here on Post Show Recaps. For those of you that didn't tune into either the end of the WandaVision coverage or the sort of transitional podcast that we did at the end of last week, this is a different voice than Josh Wigler, obviously.
Wait, you're not Josh? What?
This is when I take off my, like, Helmet Zero-like facial technology to reveal that I am not Josh Wigler this entire time. I'm going to be stepping in for Josh. Josh is stepping away from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier coverage. He's got a lot of great stuff to do, not only with the podcast here on Post Show Recaps proper, but as well on Inverse.com, which they are just, like, up to their eyes in Falcon and the Winter Soldier content. Much like the Wilson family is up to its eyes in debt, so is Josh Wigler with content on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So if you're missing some Josh, check it all out on Inverse.com. But for right now, the three of us are going to be holding down the fort, covering these six episodes. We put this out at the beginning of every episode, but let me put it out once more as we get into a new season that we are going to be spoiling everything from here on out about the first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Maybe some other stuff, depending on what sort of speculation is going to come out of this. So fair warning, if you have not watched the episode, go ahead and watch it on Disney Plus right now. It's about, 47 minutes plus credits. So be sure to check that out and then pop back here. And of course, at the beginning of a new series, we always appreciate you subscribing to our Everything is Super Only feed on your podcatcher of choice, as well as giving us some nice ratings and reviews. Cap's got a big star on his uniform, and you hope he can give us 5 stars as well and truly make this America's Falcon and the Winter Soldier podcast, if you want to, rather than America's ass, which I guess would be the other end.
Were you meaning to say America's podcast?
Ooh, I like that. I think it passes with me. Might not pass with Josh, Kevin, but I think the pun game is openly accepted right now from my perspective. More hits than misses if we're going back to battleship parlance. But sure. Yeah, here we are, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, after, a lot of anticipation, years of anticipation, given that once upon a time, this should have, in another universe, aired a year ago as the first slate of programming the MCU is putting on Disney Plus. We have finally experienced the opening episode, and there is a lot to get into, but to start, I would love to just go around the panel and get your overall thoughts on the episode proper and what we think might be coming 5 weeks down the line. LaTanya, let's start with you.
I thought it was Falcon great. I did.
Keep pushing that branding.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode from the opening that I thought was super cool, even if I nor Sam really understand the mission that he was being sent on.
What is its mission?
It's subtle.
Be subtle with the Christ imagery. And just jumping out of a plane and the symbol of the Christ. I enjoyed that part. I really enjoyed getting to have a glimpse into the lives of Sam and Bucky. I mean, we don't get to see this a lot. Like these, that's why I think that these Marvel shows are so cool, right? In addition to WandaVision being about, grief and gentrification, it's also like a study in character. And this show is very much of a piece of that as well. We are getting to learn about the contours of the relationships that Sam has with his family, as well as a lot about his personal past. We're getting to see Bucky kind of like trying to live now in it's 2023 or 24, I think, in mm-hmm. the timeline. So even like, you know, ahead of where we are at the moment, but being a 106-year-old man who was kind of like a murder zombie. So dealing with all of that in therapy, which is also pretty cool. There's not a lot of scenes of like men in therapy. I don't know that there are any scenes of superheroes in actual therapy, aside from that little like stinger that we had of Iron Man and the Hulk at the end of one of the Iron Man movies. So yeah, really enjoy this show. I'm excited to talk about all of the different themes that are surrounding it, like American exceptionalism, nationalism, how race plays into those things, borders and the military industrial complex, which is obviously what this show is about. Those are the things that this comic book show is wanting to address.
What'd you think, Kevin?
I really like this first episode. I think the beginning was great. I think at the beginning is an action piece, and I personally love that. I think it sets it apart a little from WandaVision, which started off very, very differently. So it kind of like set the tone for, I think, a little more action oriented series. But I the beginning to me already setting up the inevitable end, because Falcon jumping out is a direct reference to Cap doing the exact same thing. And I believe Avengers. So I think having that moment of reflection between parallels between Sam and Steve, I think is really, really cool. But then I personally do think that the show really did like exceed what I'm hoping for by delving into the characters, by after the action scenes, having these moments with Sam and his family and with Bucky. And this is the most likable Bucky has been since the first of Captain America movie. Like, he actually has a bit of charm. He actually mm-hmm. isn't he's making jokes. This is the guy that I think was friends with Steve Rogers in the time period. This is the one, and I know obviously he's been through a lot, right? But this is really delving into that, I think, a really great way. But we're also getting a lot of his personality, and I really like that. And I like he's gotten a haircut, but finally, I guess, like he said, he went from one wart straight to the next, so he didn't have time to cut his hair, but he's got time now, so he Relatable. Has. And I think it's a lot better. But yeah, this show has a lot that it's going to explore, including part of me that's just like, the ending was great, but it's also like, I think we were talking about this, Mike, you and I before, where it was just like, well, what did you expect to happen, Samuel? Like, there's a moment of like, this like,
Samuel Wilson.
Yeah, like, how could they do this? And I'm just like, how couldn't they do this? The moment that one dude was just kind of like shaking his hand and it was just like, it was the right decision. I literally wrote down F that guy because I knew he was going to be the one who did this. And sure enough, the moment he shows up at that podium, I'm like, yeah, read you like a book as well, you mother. Anyway.
Yeah, I wonder who that guy is, because it seems like, I don't know if he was representing the Department of Defense, because we know that, like, the Secretary of State position has always been, like, the seediest thing, right? Like, we had Robert Redford's character in The Winter Soldier, and then we had, of course, Brent Steele, winner himself, Thunderbolt Ross occupying the position. Like, this might just be like the defense against the dark arts of the MCU. Like, there's another shady guy to step into the position and be like, all right, time to do some evil stuff now that I have the job officially.
And then Bucky will eventually take the position. And it's just like, I guess this is okay. He's the good one who takes the position, I suppose.
I suppose so. But he might be. He did have the Snape hair prior to getting cut. I mean, to echo both of your thoughts, if I had three words to describe this premiere, for me, it would be a solid start. It is so low key, not to be confused with the show that's coming in 3 months. It might honestly be one of the most like low key pieces of the MCU that we have experienced so far, because sans the Flag Smasher stuff and the first action sequence, this was just so down to earth and character focused. I mean, we barely have ever had superheroes focusing on keeping their family business afloat. You know, it was surprisingly low stakes yet high stakes. In that regard, I totally agree with what you both said, in that one of the things that I said last week is that I was just so excited to get to know these two characters. And I think in exploring Sam's past and sort of Bucky's future, it is really showcasing how these are two characters that can be mined for so, so much. And I heard, some criticism from people, especially in comparison to a show like WandaVision, that they felt this was too slow. A little too simplistic.
I'm sorry, they felt it was too slow compared to WandaVision?
No, I was going to say that. First of all, not only is it apples and oranges, it's like apples and like a stool in terms of just completely different objects entirely. But what I will say is that I know that this trope has been thrown out 1,000 times, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier has been really billed as a 6-hour movie. And now watching the first episode, I really see that. This first episode reminded me so much of like the first act of an action movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Here are two heroes. They're separate, but they're leading, lives that are thematically tied together. And then they're eventually going to come together. This really did feel to me like the beginning of things rather than necessarily like this is an episode of a TV show than WandaVision obviously went through.
I would almost argue this is not the first act, but getting into semantics, I think this is the setup to inciting incident, right? Like, this is, if we're getting into storytelling, guess what? Here I come. I think this is, when you start the story, you establish the characters and their world. Where are they now? And I think that's what we're getting a lot of here. So they positioned, what Sam is up to, what Bucky's up to, and then you have the inciting incident, which will be the call to action for your heroes. And I think that's the ending of this episode, right? That moment is both a call to action for Sam, and I think it's going to be a call to action for Bucky, having this new punchable face, in my opinion, underneath that helmet. Of their friend, of the person that they have both shared such connection to. So I think I think you're right. I think this really, really hit exactly that, like from a storytelling POV to a T.
A couple of things. First of all, regarding U.S. agent / new Captain America, not America's ass, specifically not.
Yeah, we saw him from the back.
Yeah, specifically not America's ass. Second, the title of this episode, I think, is very important as well. It's just called New World Order. There's no the, which is a term that I'm sure people have heard of before reference, but just for a little backstory on it, in our world, it was first popularized, in connection to Woodrow Wilson after World War I and beginning to form the League of Nations. And then, when the League of Nations, started to, the ship started to go down, the former Secretary General of the UN at that time essentially said that it was a result of American power projection, that we were even using that term. Later on, Bush 2, in trying to like get people together for, get countries together for the war on Iraq and Afghanistan, used it. And it's been a term that really has been bandied around a lot, especially by Americans in policy, to kind of symbolize a change that has happened, a shift that has occurred, often after big things like world wars, for example. The incident in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that causes us to have the title, though, is the blip. And so there's a new world order that is established in that way, as well as, we've got this is after the death of Tony Stark. Captain America is gone to another timeline, even though it seems like no one is sharing that information that knows about it. And so we're entering a whole new world order in terms of how people are supposed to cope after everyone came back from the blip. And that brings us to people like the Flag Smashers, for example, and other groups that I'm sure we're going to meet during our time with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I just thought it was really cool that that was the title, because it's such a loaded phrase to use for the title of your first episode.
Not to contradict you, but I'm pretty sure New World Order is actually from wrestling and the WCW. I believe that that's the originator with Hulk Hogan and yes. Kevin Nash.
Oh, yeah, actually, it's WW Woodrow Wilson versus WCW. There's a yes, popular misconception.
It's very easy to confuse. Yes. It is a confusing time.
I really loved Sam's speech at the Smithsonian, because I think it absolutely reflects what you're talking about, LaTanya, with him specifically saying, we need new heroes, one suited for the times that we're in. And it almost suits a double purpose in that, like you said, I feel like one of the most delicious parts of this episode from like a canonical perspective was really exploring the post-blip world. I kind of feel like Spider-Man Far From Home sort of like made it a joke at the very beginning and then didn't really talk about it. WandaVision obviously almost purposely separated himself from that. So this is the first time we're really coming to terms with a traumatic event that has rocked the universe. And so not only is Sam making a comment about that, it's also a meta conversation about how does the MCU move on from the Infinity Saga? Mm-hmm. And this idea of new heroes and heroes that are suited for what's to come, I think also maybe sends out a flag, if you will, to say, like, this is the type of stuff we're going to be tackling now. And I know, Kevin, as someone who, you know, there's been a lot of puzzling done even just in the Discord proper about, you know, the fallout post blip. What did you think about the way that we finally got to sort of see the world of 2023 and all of its tragedies therein in this episode?
I mean, the least surprising thing, I suppose, is that the blip was used to further marginalize other groups. like, shocker, I suppose. But yeah, it's interesting seeing the effects of the blip from this POV. I think, like you said, we've gotten these like the horrifying, tragic moments, the comedy of it. But this is really delving into the societal structure and how it's changed, right? And I think that's really interesting and that's really fascinating. And that's affected people in so many interesting ways, because even when Sam is and his sister are having that argument, I felt complicated in a way, because she was the one literally running the ship for 5 years, but the idea that it's just like, it's not like he left by choice. Like, when he joined the army, he definitely did. 100%, no question. But it's such a tough conversation. And I think both, it's one of those things where I see both perspectives here. And it sucks, because it is like, he's gone for 5 years, but it's not like, he like made that decision to like get blipped out. But he wasn't there, and he wasn't there the moment that when their dad passed away, and he went and joined the army. So he doesn't really have a claim here to make this choice for the one who's been running the business. So, like, there's a lot, that happens even on a smaller scale besides the bigger scale. It's really interesting that the government is the government, of course. I think that part, like I said, like, what did you expect to happen? And I'm curious.
Kevin, we live in a society. Okay.
We live in a society. Isn't that right, Captain? Anyway,
I did see some familiar long stringy hair behind that Flag Smashers mask.
Jared Leto confirmed. Multiverse confirmed. We did it. Let's start theorizing now.
Yeah,
everyone.
If Torres gets a pig carcass and a condom shipped to him, I think we'll know who's behind that.
Good Lord, we did Jesus. It in podcast.
Yeah, that's a wrap. Pack it up, everyone. American in a nutshell. A pig, anyway. Yeah, a lot of that stuff is really fascinating, really interesting, and I'm excited and interested to see how it delves further into these fallouts. And part of me is also wondering, the fallout seems to be the shows, so to speak. I feel like the movie, Endgame happened, and we rushed it through a lot of the stuff, but the Marvel shows, I feel like, are about the Fallout in its various shapes and forms. Between WandaVision here, between Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I think even Loki, because Loki, from what we understand, is essentially time is broken, and he's going to serve a sentence by helping fix it. And that time being broken is a direct also fallout from what happened in Endgame and I think Infinity War. So all these shows seem to be in some way, shape, or form dealing with the fallout of what happened. And I think that's really interesting and that's really cool. And again, gives us a lot of time to delve into these characters in a fascinating way and how the world has changed in such a way that sets us up for a different future.
Yeah. So, LaTanya, I would love to get your thoughts on all things Sam Wilson here, because Kevin did a great segue here into not only, you know, I guess the economics of the post-blip world was seen through that terrible bank scene where you have this loan shark essentially say with one breath, "We're going to deny your family this loan. By the way, can I get a picture?" And we'll find out so much about not only the Avengers pay structure, which I'm sure we'll get into, but also just, again, you know, we get just a piece of dialogue that the world has sort of tightened its loans just based on the fact that half of its population appeared all at once. And like Kevin said, it squeezes out those that are quite literally barely keeping afloat in the case of Sam and Sarah Wilson.
Right. In the first episode of this show, we get to see redlining, you know, happen. For those of you all who aren't familiar with that term, it's a discriminatory practice that puts services, which mostly are financial, out of the reach of residents of certain areas, specifically based on their race or ethnicity. And, you know, it is a little ridiculous to be like, "You don't have finances for the last 5 years." Yeah, you're right. I was a dead then. I was blipped away. And now I'm back. And I have protected this whole world so that you can sit in this chair and be smug and ask me for a picture. So give me a loan. And still that doesn't happen. And I think that that parallels the experiences of so many people who have either put their lives on the line in terms of, you know, service that they've done overseas for the military, or just like small business owners who go into banks every day and are victims of redlining practices based on where they live and based on their race and ethnicity. And for that to happen in a Marvel show is kind of, I don't want to say revolutionary because it's not. it's definitely unexpected. And it's definitely not a direction that you would expect for the shows to go in. But at the same time, it seems like exactly the type of thing that this show would discuss, in the same way that we got a deep dive exploration into what trauma can do to a person in WandaVision. We're also getting this kind of exploration of what does it mean to be famous or a superhero in this world and to look like Sam Wilson. It definitely doesn't mean riches and money. Apparently, no one is paying him to do anything to the point where he's had to re-enlist in the Air Force. You know, my parents re-enlisted when we were falling on hard times as well, like in real life. So it's just, it's so much a part of what's happening in the actual world, what's going on in this scene. And it's just so, it makes me so angry that someone could, you know, literally defend the world from a villain and then come back and not even be able to get a loan. At the same time, his sister, Sarah, was like, "This isn't going to work. I've already tried this."
Just listen, we've been through this.
But I do understand. I definitely understand where Sarah is coming from. She's very world weary at this point. She's had to deal with a lot on her own and being the caretaker of so many different people and then seeing her family's business and legacy. Like she said, "It took me a long time to come to terms with doing this. We're selling this boat." But then I can understand how Sam being off first doing, you know, saving the world and then having been blipped away would expect to come back to things being more or less the way that they were before. And now he's trying to hold on to any semblance of what that looked like and what his family Legacy is, and really all this episode is all about legacies. It's about his family legacy. It's about the legacy of Captain America and what that means to Sam and to Bucky, but also to America and the rest of the world. And so to see this all kind of like come together in this awful scene with this dude that also has a very punchable face, was really something.
I guess, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac did not blip away. They will never go away, I guess.
all of the people that used to work there, like as underlings, just got promoted, and now this is what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I loved everything you said there, and the new characters, and we'll go into them over the course of this podcast. But man, Sarah Wilson, like, came out of the gate. I love her. She's a great character.
She's so awesome.
Yeah, her and I think Adepero Oduye and Anthony Mackie have really great chemistry as well. Like, you really get that sort of sibling synergy, in my opinion.
Yes. Especially the, like, don't hit me again.
That hurt. Don't hit me again.
Yeah.
It's familiarity right there.
But it's a great call, because, I mean, Sam's storyline was by far, in my opinion, the most unexpected part of this episode, that we knew next to nothing about the MCU version of Sam Wilson. Kevin, I'm not sure if any of this stuff scans with what we know about his origin in the comics, but I mean, I never would have looked at Sam Wilson prior to this series and thought, like, yep, here's a guy who grew up on a family fishing boat in NOLA and is now coming back to make amends because he deserted his dying daddy because he couldn't handle the pressure of it.
I mean, I don't think the origins are that far off. I think that it's one of those like situations where it's updated slightly for modern day Marvel, right? Like, most of these characters, when they appeared, it's like Tony Stark, you know, having originally been injured, I think, in World War II, and now updated to like the most recent war. But it is good to get these backstories and get these delving into the characters, and backstories and stuff are going to change for the show. But I think they're doing it for the better. Like, even with the stuff for Bucky that they're doing, I think is a little more delving further in and deeper than some of the stuff that we got in the comics too. I think the benefit of the character and the story they're trying to tell. And for Sam, I just really love what they're setting up with this character, and the idea of course, clinging on to part of the past, right? Like, that's the whole thing. He was gone for 5 years, and he's clinging on to this part of the past that he can control in a way, or hope to control, or hope to fix, as opposed to the thing that he let go of because he feels like he can't fix it, which is the Captain America situation. So, like, I think that interesting parallel, that setup of a psychological dissonance between what you can let go and what you can accept is really what's trying to, like, set up for this character. And I think that's fascinating, and that's really interesting. And I'm excited to see that play out, right? Like, we all also are assuming that this ends with him in, you know, the Captain America role, but we don't technically know that. If the idea is that it's time for new heroes, maybe it's something different. Maybe they might change some stuff. I think for reasons that are way bigger, I think him taking over a mantle of Captain America is good and is important. But, like, a lot of that stuff is interesting to see. And also, I'm really hoping that the series actually does end with a shot of the moon and old man Steve Rogers is just staring out a window. Because, man, oh, man, would that be amazing?
That would be incredible. I mean, there was a lot of commentary on online conspiracies. But, yeah, I love how they played, obviously, for both dramatics with the Flag Smashers, but also comedy. Yeah, of course. Of course, there's someone out there being like, oh, pretty sure Captain America got sent to the moon. I've seen the affidavits. He sent an Instagram post and you don't see the wind blowing in the background. Therefore, he's on the moon. Hashtag Moon Steve confirmed.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, speaking of the Cap stuff, I do want to talk briefly about the Rhodey cameo in this episode, because
Don Cheadle was there.
Yeah, so this was a little bit something that was announced prior to the series that Rhodey would be making an appearance. I don't think any of us knew when, why, or how, and we got all three questions answered here in the premiere. And there was a lot coming out of this. Obviously, we got a bit more fleshed out as to why Sam decides to abdicate the shield in this moment. But there is something really symbolic to me about how you sort of have Tony Stark is dead, Cap has moved on, and we sort of have like the next in line, right? The next of kin in the form of Sam Wilson and Rhodey talking to each other. Like, I don't know, LaTanya, to that point about that speech that was made earlier, this very much felt like who's going to be the next generation of people to take up those roles that were previously occupied.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that they were connected by they both lost their best friends very recently. Mm. So they're connected by that. And I really hope that some of what Rhodey says, you know, comes back to Sam later here, because it's a really poignant conversation, and the way that they're framing it against all of the Captain America iconography is also very cool. I was watching one video where they were talking about the cinematography of Sam being like slightly off center when they put the shield in the foreground, because he's not completely aligned yet with kind of the ideology of it and wanting to take over the mantle of it. So in addition to it just being a very poignant conversation between two people who just experienced a lot of loss and experienced something that, you know, only so many people in the world will ever experience, is how, you know, fighting an alien from outer space.
Excuse me, LaTanya, his name is Dr. Space Cape. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Senor Space Cape. But yeah, I love Don Cheadle as an actor. I think he got completely jobbed twice this year when he was nominated for two different Golden Globe Awards, and then we got to watch him lose both of them. But I love him as an actor. I love that he doesn't differentiate between movies and TV. He's very British like that. And his presence alone conveys a weight to this story at the very beginning that we haven't gotten before in the MCU.
Hmm. Kevin, you were someone who obviously, due to the way that you digest this stuff, did not know, I'm assuming, that Rhodey was coming on here. So what was your reaction to his cameo?
Very excited. Like, when they comes, I was like, oh man, it's Rhodey! Like, I literally said that out loud. But I was really excited about that, because you're also setting up a situation where, like, Rhodey is understanding of Sam's feelings, but also is just like, man, I work for the military. What are you doing? Like, you know, like, he's trying to not just outright be like, this is stupid. But, like, yeah. I think
come
he's,
on, man.
You know, yeah, I think he's doing it in a way that's very purposeful, and hopefully, you know, convincing Sam subtly to reassess and hopefully end where he needs to be. And I really like that. And it's true that, like, both these characters lost their best friend. And again, I think something that's going to be about characters who lost someone who weren't always hanging out. I think it's different for Falcon and Rhodey, because they have shared moments and scenes together in previous films, not a ton, but they have. And normally you might it's easy to also like want to just be like, oh yeah, what, the two black characters have a connection, but at the same point, they would if they're just surrounded by other white people half the time. Like, there's like, there is a thing where if I was in a group like that and there was another brown person, we would sort of just kind of like to like have a conversation and talk, because
I
we
wish
were the
everyone
only two.
Could see the little dance that
I really, and I really hope
now.
It is accompanied by the sound when you do it,
yes,
as well.
Yes. It's
I
real
hope
subtle.
That this is how you approach all brown people. It's just being like
to decide like a crab, no, as well. Not even like, yeah, just like a crab.
Moving sideways and saying doot doot doot.
Yeah, but I like that because of these moments too, where there's like a lot that happens in a conversation like this that is left unsaid or not necessary to explain, because the other person gets it because of shared experience. And I think that's something very, very true to life, where when I talk to certain people, I have to sometimes explain a little bit more because they don't fully get what I'm trying to say. Whereas if I talk to another friend, like if I talk to, you know, like another brown person, or if I talk to like a black person, there's a certain, I mean, there's a language that you don't have to like worry that they're not going to get what you're trying to say, I guess, is the best way to put it. And I think that's something here. Like, I was talking to one of my other friends about this. Like, we're able to just jump into certain things because we know that we get what each other are trying to say without having to, like, oh, right, I need to explain this in some way. But not in a way that comes off as me being like, let me explain to you about, like, redlining, right? Like, let me explain to you about redlining. Like, you don't have to do that. You can just have the conversation. But and I like that there is that with these two characters, is the long way around of saying that I like this scene because it felt very purposeful and true.
Yeah, I don't want there to be relationships between Black people that are based only in trauma, though, which is kind of what this is. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people who look like each other tend to gravitate towards one another, and they're not all trauma based. A lot of it is, like you were saying, Kevin, just kind of a shared language or shared experiences, the do-do-do of it all. And so I don't want to think of it like that, but I do like to think of the subtext of the conversation, like of Rhodey's half of the conversation being like, dude, come on. Like, yeah. Just what are you doing here? Like, yeah. That was a nice speech, but go get that thing back. and let's figure some stuff out, you know? I'd like to talk to Pepper Potts. I know she wouldn't remember being in the show or any of the movies that she was in, but I'd just like to see, you know, she's giving out checks everywhere. Where are the Avengers checks?
Okay, I understand why, because that's the story they're going to have to go with, but like that just like the habit that like Tony was not paying them is crazy talk to me, because like it's a plot point in the comics that most of the Avengers, and especially at a certain point in the modern day, and when Tony formed a new Avengers after Disassembled, which is a storyline where Wanda changed the world, or rather disbanded the Avengers, like he paid the people on the team. Specifically, that's how he got, like, there's this amazing moment where he's going to each person and talking to them about why he wants them to join the team and the importance, and he hopes that the team can bring them X, Y, or Z. And literally, the only panel with Spider-Man is, like, Spider-Man hugging him and Tony just being just like, you get paid. And Spider-Man just like, oh, thank God. like, that is such a key part of it and such a hilarious moment. So it's just, I understand for the movies why I understand why they're doing this route, but I was just like, ah, come on. Like, it was just one of those moments.
It's an interesting revelation. I'm still not entirely, I don't know, on board with the logic of it all personally, that Sam sort of statements of altruism, right? It feels very PR-y for him to be like, we do good things, and so people give back to us. It's the natural state of things. Yeah. Like, that's not the way the world works.
That doesn't sound like what's happened to you, Sam, because you don't have any money.
Yeah.
So it
yeah.
doesn't sound like you've gotten any goodwill from anyone.
Or also, even, like, speaking of will, couldn't Tony Stark have been like, hey, in case do a super-duper snap, I have billions and trillions of dollars. I'm going to disperse it amongst everyone who's helped me over the course of 10-plus years.
Nah. No.
Apparently
my
not.
Pepper and my child need all of that money. Those two people need all of those trillions of dollars.
I guess they're rich, even Tony Stark.
It's a good question, though. I know it was something that was brought up in the PSR Discord ever since the penultimate WandaVision episode had Wanda driving what could be loosely described as a sick-ass Buick.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, yeah, like, I guess I wonder what the payment situation is. And I thought, I don't know if they get paid. And Kevin made a great point, again, about how in the comics, it's canonically even like a plot point. But evidently here, I guess that Buick was indeed like a factor of goodwill. Maybe there was a deal down at the car dealership. Of like, hey, if you got blipped, your car half off.
Now again, we know the house in New Jersey.
Yeah, we know that Wanda made that Buick. Come on now.
Out of what? Did she downgrade? If she could have changed it, why not just hit that thing into a Benz or something and ride that?
She made the car that she wanted and the color that she wanted, you know? Let the lady have her prerogative.
What was it? It was like a lemon. It was like a jalopy, and she used her powers much like she made the things into the circus tent. She made a car into a Buick and was like, all right, great. The car I've always wanted.
Yeah, good enough.
She's a Sokovian refugee, essentially. Who knows? Like, a Buick is probably the car she's been dreaming about since she was a child. Who knows?
Yes. Buicks. Cars for witches.
Yeah, and that has its pros and its cons in advertising, right? Like, some people might really be into that idea. Others might not. But Sam is, you know, trying to make some dough, as we talked about before, doing these missions for the Air Force. And I just want us to talk briefly before we move on to the other half of the titular couple here about that first action scene that Kevin talked about. Because I agree, I think on paper it was like fill-in-the-blank Marvel action sequence. But I think it actually, the more you look at it, thematically speaking, has some really fun connections, particularly to Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Because it is a huge mirror to that, complete with the exact same antagonist.
The same guy.
That rocks.
Yeah, George Petrock is back. Yeah, exactly. He's doing some more leaping this time around, leaping out of a plane specifically. But
yeah, hard to leap within the plane. He didn't get to do his flippy kickies in the plane
just
itself.
Like pounding on his chest, you know, which isn't masculine or aggressive at all.
Like a
fine.
Wolf of Wall Street, if you will. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He was pumping himself up. Unfortunately, Sam. Yeah, and money's involved there as well, just in less nefarious circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, the mirror was there, obviously. And while this did seem, you know, a little out of nowhere compared to everything, I think it does set up this great idea of, despite Sam refusing to take up the mantle of Captain America, he's literally doing the exact same missions Captain America did, fighting the exact same guys from 10 years ago.
Yeah, he's already doing all the work, so just give him the title. I cannot fathom how many times I've said that about my own life, but it's true. You know, he's already doing exactly what Captain America did. He just, all the way down to the fact that he has no idea why he is doing this mission, who he is rescuing, or what it is for. He is just following orders like you do when you're in the military. Jumping out of planes in a similar way that, you know, that Cap did in Captain America and the Winter Soldier. It's such a cool parallel. I love the way that they do it. I also just really love the visual, like, spectacle of all of it. It's just beautifully shot. It looks movie grade. Like, it looked amazing to watch. And to see all those people kind of flying around in their, like, Hydra suits. Or I don't know what you call those things. They're flying
I believe it's if you play Super Mario 3, I believe that he has Super Mario World, right? He has, like, the glider suit that he can attach the wings to glide through the air.
Okay,
yes,
thank you.
Those are the official names.
Wing glider in the air. That part was, the opening was just really cool. It was like a jolt of adrenaline that I did not know that I needed or wanted at the time. And then when it happened, I was just like, okay, that was awesome.
In the same place that Will Smith fought some aliens as well.
Oh, same location?
Should Sam have punched Bartrock in the face and said, "Welcome to Libya"?
Like, yeah, please don't fly into Libyan airspace.
Yes.
I also like the little sidekick, Torres. He's great.
So that's an interesting note, because, Kevin, a lot of comic fans would clock the name Joaquin Torres, and considering his current connection with Falcon, I don't know. I don't know if we want to plant our flag or our flag smashers places in fear of theorizing, but did you have any thoughts about a larger role that Torres might play in all this?
I mean, I certainly think the larger role is possible. I mean, if we want to say, if I'm not mistaken, he is the new Falcon in the comics, because Sam Wilson is someone else. So I think that's really interesting that they could be laying the groundwork. Again, why theorize in certain things anymore? Yeah. I feel like that one's not one that's super far off. When Sam Wilson showed up at a certain point in the movies, there was, of course, an inevitability of just, like, there's a chance he could be Captain America one day. So I do think there's a chance that Torres might become Captain America, or Captain America, maybe as well, if the thing just keeps passing that way. But he could become the new Falcon. For a hot minute, I thought they killed him. I literally gasped when he got stopped. And I was like, because I don't know where that actor's from. I just kept saying he was the
he's from on my block, I think.
Okay, I kept being like, he looks like the child of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Adam Driver.
Ooh, wow.
He looks like a fusion of those two gentlemen. But like,
okay. That explains a lot, because I was like, oh, this Torres is hot.
I mean, if you're taking those two genes and putting them together, you're getting it. Pretty good.
Man, I love you. I mean, go find some more flag smashers.
The flag smashers are really interesting. This is a lot of the stuff that's being set up. Obviously, there could be implication that the person in the original mask could be the same person under the Captain America mask at the end. The person has some sort of powers associated with them. Did they mimic some form of the Super Soldier Serum? Like, what the situation is there? There's obviously a lot of questions, a lot of setup, but I also find it really interesting with the Flag Smashers, because it seems to be their entire philosophy is just like, we will just you know, smash all flags and unite under one, like, one group, regardless of race and blah, 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 almost
yeah,
in a very,
borders.
Like,
getting rid of borders.
There's this idea that's almost there, and I'm curious if they're going to go with it, where they're the group where it's just like, well, we don't see race, and it's just like, okay, sure. Like,
I don't think they're going to go that way with it. I think that it's going to be more of a commentary on Americanism. Or, like, just the symbols and the ideology behind being an American than anything else. Because from what I understand, the Flag Smashers don't think that there should be borders. They think that people should be able to travel freely between nations in order to just essentially have a more perfect union, like more of a utopia, essentially. I don't know that the not seeing color thing is going to be in there, because I think it's impossible when you're dealing with a open border situation.
Well, 100%. I think that's the thing about, like, why that philosophy is very flawed. Like, the idea of just, like, we don't need to see color. And it's just like, there's so many things about what you just said.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of reasons it's flawed. Like, I'm pretty sure that the people of Israel and Palestine would have an issue with no borders, you know, for example. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who else would have an issue with that? America. We've always had an issue with it, and we still have an issue with it, and we detain people who come over here who try to flag smash.
Well, if anything, America wants one nation under God. It's part of our creed.
Under
invisible. Yeah, so the Flag Smashers in the comics is interesting. First off, the Flag Smasher was one singular character. So that I find it that interesting that I think, again, speaking towards maybe some of the more timely aspects, as we talked about last week, that has now sort of been sewn into an online stoked community of domestic terrorists.
Yeah, I think. Weird.
It's like a flash mob of domestic terrorists, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all right, everyone, show up on this location and break into your bank robbery dance. Get your special costumes on. It's really intriguing because their specific platform, like you said, LaTanya, is anti-nationalist terrorism. That they, I believe in the comics specifically, are even less about the open borders and more so about, like, you think you're hot shit, insert country here, we're going to show you that you're not, because these things can happen behind your own borders. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really intriguing perspective, because it's that whole, like, F society, hack the planet anarchist thing of trying to bring down institutions from within, but they're doing it in pursuit at this characters, this perspective of a group that was incensed by probably being subscribed to r/Thanos was right. Right. They're essentially saying life was better during the blip. That's saying something. That's really saying
that's a
something.
Lot.
Things were a lot better when half of you weren't here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's not far off from, like, certain people, right? That's because people were like, Thanos has a point, which we discussed heavily in our podcast as well. So it's not far off that this would become a reality.
But it probably was better for a lot of people, or, you know, when half the population disappeared. I'm sure that there was some issues just trying to keep the lights on at first. Mm-hmm. But then once they started to get things figured out and got out of their collective depressions, they were probably making more money, had better jobs, etc. Maybe had better opportunities to live in different places, and now all of a sudden everyone shows up kind of like where they blipped, and maybe some of those people are showing up in, like, a boardroom or, you know, a new house that, like, a family has or something like that. So, I mean, it's Sam says it in the scene where he's trying to fix Red Wing. He says, usually when things get better for another group, they get worse for all the other groups. And, you know, that's probably true of what the people who are in the Flag Smash mob think. The Flag Smash flash mob. That's easy to say. And it's also probably one of the big reasons why the United States federal government decided that there has to be a Captain America in order to deter people at the very least, and to, you know, avenge at the worst One of the things that's interesting about this Captain America that I don't know if you all noticed is that he has a gun.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's screams very much Bucky's reign as Captain America in the comics.
Yeah, and Steve didn't have a gun, from what I understand. Like, everything that he was doing was like the best offense is a good defense kind of thing. Trying not to use lethal force, even though I know that, like, you can't hit someone in the head with vibranium and be like, you're good.
He's fine.
but at least not using a gun. So there's so much symbolism that's happening in this episode, and there's so many different clashing ideologies already in the first episode. I'm really interested, and we haven't even gotten to see Zemo yet or know what Zemo is doing. So I'm really excited to find out kind of how they pull all of these like different conflicting yet dovetailing ideologies together and explain essentially what the Flag Smashers want. And we get more into the intrigue of what America is doing to combat that.
Yeah, it's interesting because essentially, LaTanya, what you're explaining about the Flag Smashers is sort of what Sam is holding on to, right? It's this idea of like tenuously grasping onto a state in the past that you loved. Mm-hmm. And almost like at the expense of others. And they're going about it just in completely different ways, to be quite obvious. There's a lot there as well, not only from an ideology perspective, but you would imagine when we left Sharon Carter, she was part of the CTU. She was with the CIA, mm-hmm. the counterterrorism unit. So you'd imagine that she'd get brought in to all of this. Like you said, Kevin, there seems to be some super soldier aspects. My pet theory is that I know that in Civil War, the movie, there was like this plot line, right, that Bucky said, well, there's actually a bunch of Winter Soldiers, yeah. and Zemo apparently killed them all. I think they could very easily say, well, actually, one was not killed, and he's now working with the Flag Smashers. But yeah, it
or
is
she.
Or she. Yeah, that's very true as well. But I find it really intriguing that, to LaTanya's point, like, Zemo, who we would assume is the big bad, nary a face or a purple mask shown in this initial episode.
He'll show up in episode 8 and they'll have a catchy song for him.
Zemo all along.
There's definitely a lot there for the Flag Smashers, and if there is a connection, probably, between the new Captain America and that organization, there's a lot of stuff that they're setting up, and no, there's no guarantee for any of it, and I think that's interesting because it keeps it surprising and keeps us on our toes about what direction they're going to go. I'm very curious about what this new Captain America is going to be like. Is he going to be closer to like a Homelander in The Boys, for example?
Where
but like the idea of like they could have it where he's secretly nefarious and he's secretly a racist or something, right? Like they could have that. That's easy to go that route. We could see it. Or we could have it that he's just kind of like an easy manipulated, like, public figure, right? Like he could be Mandarin, not a Mandalorian. He could be like the Mandarin.
He could also
Trevor.
Be a Mandalorian.
Yeah. He could be like Trevor, where it's just a face, right? It's just, it's the setup for the bigger stuff that the government is trying to pull by having him out there. Like he's just what Cap was originally. In the first Avenger, where he wasn't being used to fight in a war at first. He was used as propaganda. So there's a lot of places they can go with this, and I'm really interested to see how that plays out, because I think there's a lot of paths forward. And I like, you know, being a little bit surprised by what they end up doing.
All right, let's get into Bucky here. We have waited long enough. The shift is over. Let's pull out some Battleship. Again, let's talk about Bucky. Kevin, I could not agree more. Sebastian Stan really came out in full force in this episode. I loved the sit down with MCU Dr. Melfi, Dr. Rayner, I think her name is. And to your point, LaTanya, I mean, do you think she's going to become a recurring thing? Because this is obviously, again, speaking to the more low-key aspect of this episode, not something we usually see. Do you think we're going to get Bucky on the couch more times than in this episode?
I think that she will become a regular, at least semi-regular person in the series, just because of what we know from the trailer, sorry, Kevin, in terms of her trying to broker a peace of sorts between Sam and Bucky. And also the fact that she said that she was like a very effective soldier before she was a psychiatrist. So there's got to be some connection. There's some connection to the military in all of this. I mean, like, who's paying for any of the things that Bucky has? He had to get pardoned for everything that he did. So I feel like the military slash the government is taking care of Bucky right now. And that she is a big part of that. She's kind of been tasked with making sure that he doesn't, like, Winter Soldier out again. So, yeah, I think that she'll return. I hope that we see more therapy sessions, because just in general, there needs to be more portrayals of therapy on television just so it can be normalized, because there are still so many people who just refuse to go to therapy and instead make 4-hour movies. But anyway, yeah, I hope she's a regular presence. She seems grounding, but also knowing. I love the passive aggressive note writing in a notebook. It's basically all I ever do. So, yeah. Yeah.
Very I hope Ryan she's from around. The Office.
Very. Please don't ever compare me to Ryan from The Office.
Season 1 and 2, Ryan is A-okay. The one who's just the straight man to the insanity. And then he just goes off the rails.
He just goes off the rails. But I mean, the other thing here is that the introduction that we get to Bucky is not Bucky. It's him in his, like, Winter Soldier form. There's a, he's having a dream. That's a flashback.
That is kind of, he didn't have a dream.
There was no dream.
There's no dream. No dream.
That's true.
Nightmare.
There is no, I don't dream anymore. I don't have nightmares anymore. I just had a nightmare. I don't have them anymore. where, you know, he is kicking all the ass, which is nice to see. I know that the Winter Soldier is evil, but I love the way he fights. I have to, I just do. Like, I just love the action scenes that feature him, where he just goes to town and he does not care who is in the way. I know that that's ridiculous and doesn't fit with anything else that I generally espouse, but I really enjoy those scenes. But it's obviously something that has deeply traumatized this 106-year-old man. And I think it's going to take years of therapy before he can even start to have a breakthrough and unpack some of these things. So yes, we have to keep fake Dr. Melfi around, Dr. Felfi.
Kevin, talk to me about the notebook. Cause again, another Winter Soldier connection, right? Both Steve and Bucky writing in stuff to sort of correct things from the past. It almost seems like Oliver Queen style. Here Bucky is with a list of names. People he's trying to make amends with. What do you expect? Is this going to be a guiding post for him throughout the season?
I mean, I thought for a moment you wanted me to talk about the Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams movie, which case I would have.
If only.
Let's talk about the notebook.
I'm assuming that's going to be like the special episode with Peggy and Cap, right? Where like they grow old and like she doesn't remember who he is.
What are you doing? I mean, that's where is what happened. We saw that scene. Anyway, it's interesting because there is a lot of connections there. A notebook to write things down in is a bit old-fashioned as well, right? Like, there's something old-fashioned about it, he says, as he has a pile of notebooks in his video over there.
Yeah, I'm currently touching a notebook.
Yeah. But there is something to that, and something to the idea of, like, the connection there. Like, Steve was trying to use a notebook, too, to, like, jot down stuff about the present and where he wants to go. Bucky is writing stuff down, again, his connection to a past, right, that he needs to let go of. There's something really fascinating about that and the parallels between him and Sam and those parts of it. Bucky, of course, is going through this because he's trying to make amends, which was such a phenomenal scene.
That was great.
I'm here to make amends. And
the
like,
three
so,
rules are kind of hilarious as
why
well.
Why is it rule number one?
Well, I love that. It's essentially, it's three rules, but rules number one and two are optional, it seems like, according to Bucky.
Definitely optional. Don't hurt anyone. Never going to happen.
Yeah, never do that.
Rule number two? I can't remember. Doesn't matter. Rule number three, profit, but also explaining I'm no longer the Winter Soldier. My name is James Buchanan Barnes, and yep. I am here for justice, and it's, essentially.
And it's so great, right? Because it's like right out of a 12-step program,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm making wrong my rights with all the wrongs. It's just in this case, it's like people you murdered, or in this case, relatives of people that you murdered.
Yeah.
That scene, I was going to say before that, it is the opposite also of Oliver Queen, because Oliver Queen had his murder notebook, yeah. or he went around and just, you failed this city, and then shot him. But
yeah, it's saying, like, this I have failed you.
Yeah, I have failed you. I'm really sorry.
Yeah. Please forgive me for murdering the people you care about.
Which, so when that stuff started off, like I said, really charming Bucky. And I, at first, when he was, you know, they're talking to Mr. Nakamura, I believe it was the old man's name. And like chatting with him and stuff, my mind immediately went to like, oh man, can Bucky only hang out with 90-year-olds because he doesn't have anything in common with modern day people?
Which
and,
makes like, sense. It makes does. Total sense.
Yes.
And I really liked that. I was really liking that fact. And then of course the moment he mentions his son, I was just like, oh no.
I know.
I was like, oh no.
I was just like, never has Moshi has so, had so much significance.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, I can relate to the woman who's like the server at the sushi bar. Cause like, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, ladies, who among us has not gone on a date with a 106-year-old super soldier? Like, who among us has not done that?
It's on the list. You know?
And then totally had them run out because they started feeling their feelings. Sometimes it happens and we just have to deal with it, you know?
I love the rug pull that happens in that scene, though, right? Because like you said, like, first of all, it takes place in Brooklyn. So you assume that, okay, Bucky just went back home because he literally has nowhere else to go. Dr. Felfi did a really great job of painting, like, you are all alone. You have nobody. You've been ghosting Sam, not to be confused with the Ant-Man and the Wasp villain. Why don't you, like, go find who you are? It wouldn't make sense. Yeah, he goes back to Brooklyn because that's where he's from. He makes friends with this nonagenarian man, because like that's the only one who like lived around the same time as him. You know, he'll grumble and grouse about the obituaries alongside him, and then like the gut punch hits you, right? Mm-hmm. Like as soon as he starts talking about his son, you really put like I don't think you even need the shrine, right? Like I think you put two and two together. I don't know if you need the name in the notebook, though. There are some fun Easter eggs in there, and you realize that like, oh. I guess Bucky, I don't know. I guess the good question is Bucky facetiously coming close to him just to make amends? Is this more so that like Bucky has nowhere else to go, so he might as well start with someone on the list? What are your takes on that?
I mean, it's tough. It could be. I mean, it's easily column A, column B. I think there is a level of feeling guilt and wanting to make amends, but also not knowing how to approach an amends like that.
Yeah.
That is really difficult. And he complicates it because it's also when you grow closer to the person, it's harder to then explain that you are the one responsible for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
See Jessica Jones and our podcast about Jessica Jones season one on the old originators of Everything is Super. So yeah, there's a lot in there that I think is really good. And again, it humanizes this character that we really didn't get a ton of in these movies, who just basically look grumpy most of the time. It's also really interesting because he talks about like this idea of he went from one war to the next almost immediately, yeah. and that's over. So he is a soldier without a mission, where Sam is running missions. Bucky has none, it seems. And when you are that and your whole life has been being a soldier and there's no mission for you, what do you do? What do you do now? And I think that's part of like what he's going through. You know, people talked about Steve, for example, when he came back and he came out of the ice and he was in a similar spot, except he kept finding a mission. He kept searching for missions. He kept searching for fights to fight before he could finally find peace. That was his journey, right? At the end of the day, is that you don't have to keep fighting him and Tony in a way. You've earned your time. And so I think that's interesting where Bucky's put in this similar position to his dead friend, except he cannot talk to his dead friend. Well, I guess we don't know Steve is dead if he is or he's on the moon.
Just look to the moon.
He's
it's like
moon.
A, it's like an American yeah. tale, right? Like I'll be looking at the same moon as you and we'll be singing to each other.
There you go.
Aww.
There you go. Everything is like American tale.
A Captain American tale.
A Captain American tale. Wrap it. We're done. We're done. Back it up.
And scene.
There are no caps in America.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
I think it was to start off with, it was a really good callback to the discussion that Cap and Falcon had way back when they met on your left about how they can't sleep in beds anymore because, you know, they're used to sleeping on the ground or a rock. And then we find Bucky having nightmares on the floor because he can't sleep in a bed of what looks like a very nice apartment. I'm going to keep saying this. I believe that Bucky has been hooked up.
Well, because, I mean, so we find out that he got pardoned by the government, right? Yes. So I guess the question is, like, was he given a per diem here? Is the government paying out more than Tony Stark might have?
Yeah, seriously. Is he just on unemployment? What's happening? Does he have an EBT card? We need to
or
find
is it like a out. Is it a 106-year-old pension that he originally started?
Oh, right. Ooh, could it be would have accrued some Social Security.
Yeah, or could it be rent controlled? You know, like this was his apartment back in the 1940s, and like it just stayed at the same rent that entire time. So now it's dirt cheap.
Yeah, the benefits of being 106 and still young and spry.
We all need to be 106 and young and spry, and none more spry than the Winter Soldier, who puts on gloves because of poor circulation.
Yes.
I love that note as well, though. It's like it was a fun note to have Bucky try to get lucky, and that like you realize, oh yeah, I guess like he is going to try to make it in this world despite being turned away by all the tiger photos apparently online. But then you realize things like, oh yeah, he has a metal arm. Oh yeah, he's constantly looking around because every time he sees a siren, he's afraid that he's going to get taken in for something. It's this odd sort of like broken psychology that he still lives with, that despite people trying to push him out into the world saying, live your normal life, to your point, he looks back and says, what normal life? There's nothing I can go back to right now.
There's nothing that I can even remember that still exists. You know, everything else is just murders. And it's terrible. This is kind of like the classic. I was thinking about this in terms of feedback that we might get about why it's okay for Bucky to have gotten a pardon, yet we harp so much on Scarlet Witch just like flying away after she did her thing in Westview. And I think that the answer to that is intention, you know, and culpability in terms of Bucky was frozen literally and then woke it up with keywords and then tortured. And then told what to do and didn't really have much control over what he did during those times. He was just
he literally
super
had
soldier.
No agency.
He
had
zero
he
agency.
Controlled.
Right. Whereas Wanda had all the agency and knew what she was doing and kept doing it anyway.
Also, let's not forget that the stuff Bucky did, he did while brainwashed, sure, but he did that stuff and then saved the world versus Wanda, who saved the world and then did the bad thing. you can't pre-pardon someone for the crimes they're going to commit later.
Sure, I feel like you're doing something bad, so let me just give you like a pass to begin with that you can use at any time.
You get one. Since you saved the world, just know that you if you one. Ever do anything really bad, you're allowed that.
You're
but
suspect.
After that, I'm just gonna...
you're suspect.
Latanya spoke about some feedback. Let's get into some stuff. And of course, if you want to write in feedback, you can every week, super@postshowrecaps.com. But we also have the great Fitzy, who sort of tracks a conversation that goes on the day of and subsequent days on the Post Show Recaps Discord as well. So we're sort of, we'll dote between the two. Here's something from Zach P. And Felipe had a similar comment basically saying, in response to the episode, I loved it. I know some are let down by this being all set up and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier weren't in a room together at all during a show named after them, but if the rest of the show is them working together in a fast-paced, character-driven blowout, then it's super easy to forgive a slower first episode. So let's throw out some numbers here, and I don't want to, you know, make bets on eggs or anything like that, but
well,
when
then
do we
what
think-
are we doing here, Mike?
All right, listen, we'll put our money where our mouth is, but when do we think that these two are going to come together? We only have 6 episodes, 1 down, 5 to go. Is it going to happen as soon as next episode?
I think probably the end of the next episode.
Yeah, I think it has to happen in episode 2. Mm-hmm.
Just structure-wise again. End of act 1, we come together.
Yeah, exactly. I guess would it, I mean, to your point though, Kevin, would it be like them coming together and be like, can you believe this shit? Can you believe this guy? Or do you think it would be more so like a formalized event to bring these two together?
Well, I don't know what the formalized event would be in terms of the motivation, because like I guess technically no, because Bucky's not underemployed by the government, and it'd be weird for the, like, there's no plot reason to bring them together to confront the Captain America situation, because as far as the government concerned, that's been solved. We have a Captain America. So I do think there's a level where they can come together in terms of both being just like, what is this? And like, you know, trying to figure that out. So I think that could unify them, and possibly the Flag Smasher stuff could also unify them.
That's going to be their mission, I think. Bucky's literally doing nothing. He's just hanging out with Nori and going and getting sushi, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And going on failed dates, you know, again, we've all been there. And so they're probably going to get them together and be like, look, we've got this like terrorist threat that's happening. The two of you should help fix it and go.
Felipe wrote, I feel like the episode barely touched on Sam being the face of the shield and just kept the energy around it with the museum stuff until the end. Let's talk about that, because while we do get some obviously doting on the past, I think Sam says in his speech that it's been a few months since the events of Endgame with everyone returning post-blip.
I think
3 or 4. LaTanya, what do you think the chances are that we get a flashback to the time in between that and the beginning of this series to see Sam doting on the shield prior to putting it back in the museum?
I think that it's possible that we get a flashback. I think that they tried, since this is a shorter series, they tried to accomplish that with the scene where he's putting it back into the art case, mm-hmm. and we're hearing the words that Captain America said to him, to say that it, you know, Sam says it feels like someone else's and Cap goes, it isn't. I think that it's going to take some inciting incidences in order for Sam to feel that not only is he worthy of taking up the mantle in the first place, but does he want the responsibility of doing so? And then I hope that we get the kind of like erasure of the first Black Captain America. I hope that we get kind of like a scene between those two people to kind of discuss this. So I don't really know if a flashback is necessary. I think that what needs to happen more is this is more of this character study where we learn about the past through the people who are currently in the present.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think anyway. We very well could get a flashback, because it's just easier as a mechanism of television.
Right.
Yeah, I really don't think we need it ultimately, right? I think what they gave us speaks to it. Like, we had flashbacks in sort of in WandaVision for obvious reasons, because you had to. The way that they were telling that story necessitated it. And I feel like this isn't a story that at thus far necessitating a flashback yet. So yeah, I don't think we need to see him doting necessarily over the shield. We kind of got that he did. We kind of got his concern just through the acting, through the emotion, and through the speeches. And I don't think we're going to, you know, I don't think he's going to want to pick up the shield until closer to the end. I think maybe now he's just like, oh, I should have just done it.
Kept it. Like, I should have not turned it into the Smithsonian, which you can just shoot in because no one can go there. I was thinking of that. Like, all of those places that are just open and available for shooting because literally no one can go there because there's a global pandemic, which, by the way, is our blip. This pandemic is our blip.
Well, and that's the thing as well, as I know that the showrunner has talked a lot about how, especially because production was obviously halted or delayed in the middle of it because of the pandemic, that I think it allowed them to sort of go back to the drawing board and especially talk about an event like the blip in a basis of a worldwide traumatic event that I don't think we would have ever expected to go through before. But yeah, I mean, I do wonder what stuff was sort of been able to film pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, given, you know, everything that was happening. So maybe we'll find that out all after the fact. Felipe also had a comment that, look, we've been throwing a lot of shade onto Tony Stark, but Felipe also pointed out that Steve kind of up and left, whether he got in his rocket or elsewise, and left Bucky to deal with his own PTSD. And it is an interesting point that, you know, while there are theories out there, we don't know where Steve is. And Bucky, I mean, for all we know, Steve is still alive, and Bucky is really hurting for a fellow 100-plus-year-old man to talk to about this stuff, Kevin.
Yeah, this is the part where I'm curious what the outcome is, but this is one of those things where Like, you really love certain characters, and I understand, you know, fiction and reality and whatever. But, like, when you do these things after the fact about, like, characters you really like, to throw a different show altogether out here, like, I love Legend of Korra, but Legend of Korra also revealed things about characters you really loved when you know, from the first series and where they end up and what they were like, and you're just kind of like, ooh, I don't want to know that they were like that. Like, I don't want to know that character was, like, kind of mean to his kid. Like, that's not something you want. And I feel like it's the same thing here that raises these questions that you just don't want. Like, you don't, like, Tony not paying people, you're just like, what the hell, man? Or, like, if Cap just, like, went to the moon and left Bucky on Earth, you're just like, what the hell, dude? Like, to be fair, he's, like, 106 himself, and maybe he's not doing, you know, well. But it is tough. Like, it is one of those things where it's just like, especially after like Civil War and Winter Soldier, where it's just like, you did all this stuff to bring your friend back, and then you just leave him. So that really is one of those things where I'm just like, I'm curious to see where they go, but it doesn't mean I'm going to like it.
He had to go see about a girl, you know?
Yeah. About a dance.
Sometimes you just leave. Sometimes you just leave your friends to deal with their trauma, and that's how it goes, Kevin.
Yeah, I guess.
We should also mention as well, in terms of like Marvel news, I do believe Kevin Feige outright said this week that any rumors about Chris Evans returning to the MCU were invalid. Yeah. So I think that we can sort of cross that off as well. My
can
theory,
you, though?
I don't know. My troll theory this whole time has been that Chris Evans was brought back to voice Zombie Cap in the What If episode that they're doing. It would be very much shades of like when they brought in George Clooney on South Park and he just did the voice of Stan's dog. Like, imagine if they said, big news, Chris Evans coming back to the MCU, and all he says is like, rah, 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 the entire time.
He is back, though. He's in the Peggy Carter episode.
Is he in the Peggy Carter Peggy Carter short? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. So he gets to play a little String Bean Steve again, which is fun.
Yes, who I think is doing a very Iron Man-esque situation, presumably built by Howard. But if I'm not mistaken, that because like you see him in the animation, so and they've confirmed that they I think got all the voice actors to do their parts. So I want to say yes.
That would make sense. I think he'd come back in that specific scenario, but I don't know if we're gonna see him as Cap again.
No,
I'm
fine with that as well. You know, again, not to sort of cross streams into DC, I've been watching Supergirl, and they sort of they broached the idea of the whole Superman thing for like a couple of episodes, and I was fine with it. And I like this idea of Cap's absence leaving such a seismic crater that now everyone is dealing with like almost nuclear fallout from this bomb that went off. That we don't necessarily need him, almost to your point, Latanya, about the flashbacks. I don't think we need him to show back up, because I feel like that almost takes away from these other two characters who are hurting so much from his absence. The lack of Steve is almost like more palpable and more emotionally anchored than having Chris Evans show back proper in that old age makeup.
And it gives us that lack. The audience needs to be able to experience what it's like to not just have characters reappear when we feel sad about it, you know?
Looking at you, comic books.
Look at you, entire industry.
No, I just mean in terms of television. It makes complete sense in comics that they would have characters show up all the time when they are, quote unquote, dead, but not in, you know, not in this world that is so much more grounded than anything that we have ever seen out of the MCU. I mean, did you ever think that we'd be having a conversation on Everything is Super about redlining and nationalism? No.
No, but I'm glad.
I did not think that would happen. So, like, with everything going on and the small number of episodes that, you know, this show has, there are only six, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So, no, I just don't think it's in the same way that we, like, went, well, I didn't, but some went, like, wild theorizing about what could possibly happen. I mean, I think that should teach us a lesson. WandaVision should teach us a lesson about like wild theories and how we can let ourselves get let down by the actual product that we're watching, and we just need to like watch and absorb.
Oh no, Latanya, you did say thing. Does that confirm the thing? The Fantastic Four is going to show up at the end of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yes. And obviously, this is leading to the Falcon unearthing the thing, and then everyone like shows up from the Fantastic Four, and then mutants.
Yeah.
Well, I will
Captain
say,
America just at mutant. The end is actually Steve Rogers from a different franchise.
I will say I it did cross my mind briefly that when it turned out they were in Louisiana, that like one of the guys working on the boat is just Gambit. He's just gonna come out and be like, "Hello, Cherie," and just like, "Here's my card. Take it if you need help on your boat."
Dear God.
Oh, God.
Dear Lord.
And Channing Tatum all along. Well, to quote LaTanya, this podcast is far from a dead. We've got 5 more episodes. So much more chatter here. We'd love to hear from you all with respect to your thoughts on this episode, as well as what's to come up in episode 2. Again, super@postshowrecaps.com, or you can write in the fantastic Post Show Recaps patron Discord. There's so many reasons to become a patron. There is so much going on, especially as we near the end of 1 month and the beginning of another one, when memberships roll over and you can really get the most out of it. And listen, if you need even just one more incentive to become a patron of Post Show Recaps, Kevin Mahadeo, you have a new podcast for patrons only, a Post Show Recap. Tell us more about
what?
It.
That is correct. I do have a new podcast, the pre-podcast, pre-show, pre-game. Pre-game, let's say. The pre-game podcast launched today for patrons. It is about an upcoming Disney Plus series called The Mighty Ducks Game Changers, in which a fellow patron subscriber and awesome person, Melissa Woodward, and I talk about the Mighty Ducks movies in this pre-game. We talk about all three of them, the various players, our love for this franchise, and our excitement for what's to be coming. And we will be doing patron exclusive podcasts each week about the show.
Yeah, so I believe that's quack. I believe that. Well, I think Game Changers is coming to Disney Plus. I want to say the 26th of March. I believe it.
That is
correct.
So
it'll be coming very soon, and you'll have weekly podcasts to correspond with that as well. So again, if you needed any other reasons, there's one more for you. But if you just want to check out everything is super, we're going to be back right here, as I talked about in the beginning of this podcast. Be sure to send us any feedback you may have. And if you want to give us any stars, ratings, reviews, etc., as we get into this new series to bump us to the top of those charts, that, of course, is greatly appreciated. You can follow all of us at Kev Mahadeo, at LK Starks, at A Mike Bloom Type, and of course at Post Show Recaps as well, and let us know your thoughts. Otherwise, you can expect these things to drop, much like Sam out of a plane, each and every Monday as we keep going through the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm so happy. This episode impressed me in a lot of ways, and even talking through it more with the two of you has made me even more excited to see what exactly is to transpire over the course of the next 5 episodes. So that's going to do it for Everything is Super this week. We'll be back next week covering episode 2 of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But until then, take care. Bye-bye. Dismissed.